Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. So let's get into a deep dive on this brand new CBDC that has been announced by Swift. They say they're going to be rolling this out in 12 to 24 months. So this report, now, first of all, let's go through this, because when I went to figure out the details, I came across something that was very suspicious, let's say. You go to, we'll just do a Google search here, Swift, CBDC platform. Okay, this is on the Swift website. Make sure you completely reject all of their cookies. And you go through, it talks about this press release and it says how great it is. This is collaborative. Yes. But then there's nothing here. Okay, about Swift. All right, so you can't find any real details. Let's go over here. Connector, the sandbox. They're calling it the sandbox, so maybe that's it. You go over here. And not really anything here either. I'm doing this intentionally. Guys, let's go back. And back to that Google search. Okay, here is the Reuters article talking about it. And this is the one that we highlighted, we went over the other day. And they reference, I thought they had a link in here, are grappling with technical complexities. Okay, not there. Let's be more specific here. All right. So here is the specific article on their website after doing a lot of digging. You notice that? But we finally found it. So you would say, fantastic. Now they can give me all the details because I'm so excited about their brand new CBDC. And I also want you to notice that if we go to any of these other articles on the right-hand side, let's just say four innovations shaping the future of finance. We click on it and it goes right to the blog post, just like you would expect. But there's one that's different. You see, if we want to get into the nitty-gritty of the actual report, then we have to download. That's weird. And then we can't just download it. Oh, look at that. We've got to give our name, last name, job title, business email, company, country, etc. It's almost like a KYC thing, right? And then I also want you to notice that if we were to go to the blog post, like all these others, same thing. Now, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I'll let you come to your own conclusions. But this is the first thing that made me incredibly suspicious, but it's not the last thing. Okay, now that we've started there, we got that out of the way, let's go over to the PDF, the report itself, which I had one of my employees download using a fake email address. So ha ha ha, Swift. Oh, of course, I'm sure they've got cookies on this and they're tracking, probably listening to everything that I'm saying right now as I pat myself on the back for being clever. But this is their main report, and I downloaded it basically so you guys don't have to. Start off by highlighting parts of the executive summary. CBDC development is accelerating, but action is needed to achieve interoperability. In other words, giving us all the control. We do need to dot a couple more I's and cross more couple more T's before we have total and unbridled control over your spending and your finances and all that cash on your balance sheet. First thing I highlighted, more than 130 countries are now exploring a CBDC, and research by OMFIF has found that almost 70% of central banks expect to issue a CBDC within the next decade. And I would say probably more than that and sooner than that. The use of CBDCs by businesses and consumers could be hindered by the existence of unconnected digital islands. Same thing, just said a different way. The only thing that will prevent us from achieving this monetary utopia is if there's some people out there, some entities that don't give us complete control. That's what they're saying by the digital islands. What are the digital islands? The digital islands are simply the ledgers. They can't consolidate and they can't centralize. You see, because once you centralize all those ledgers, guess what? The power is yours. You see, in fact, you know what might be wise? I pulled this up for a whiteboard video tomorrow. Just a very quick detour. We'll go to Gosbank. I think you guys will get a kick out of this. So Gosbank, we just go straight to Wikipedia. And here you go. This was the one bank in Russia from about 1922 to call it 1990, 1992. And it was the central bank and it was the commercial bank, one and the same. So basically you had a unified ledger. Okay. But this was before computers and Bitcoin and blockchain and all of this stuff that we think is necessary in order to give the central planners the control that they have through a CBDC. But let's check this out. The Soviet state used Gosbank primarily as a tool to impose centralized control upon industry in general. Using bank balances and transaction histories to monitor the activity of individual concerns and their compliance with five-year plans. Not your plan, but the government's plan. And directives. Gosbank did not act as a commercial bank in regard to profit motive. Very important you understand that. You guys know how I always talk about them being able to issue credit to whomever they want based on a social score and not a credit score. Why? They don't have to be paid back. But this is nothing new. Gosbank was doing the exact same thing in 1923, for heaven's sakes. Going back to Wikipedia, it acted, theoretically, as an instrument of government policy instead of independently and impartially assessing the creditworthiness of the borrower. Why? Because they couldn't go bust. If you have a bank that doesn't have to transfer a liability anywhere else, they don't need assets. So they can issue credit. They don't have to worry about getting paid back. That's the bottom line. Gosbank would provide loan funds to favored individuals, groups and industries as directed by the central government. So if I were to just read this in 2023, you would say, well, George, that's a central bank digital currency. That's Fedcoin. Right, but they didn't have Fedcoin back then. They didn't have any of this technology. It was simply a unified ledger. You see, and that's my point with all of this. It's to try to get you guys to think in terms of ledgers and not in terms of money. Let's get back to the PDF. Our phase two sandbox project is one of the largest global CBDC collaborations ever. In July 2023, we launched a second phase of our CBDC sandbox project to build on the learnings from phase one and introduce more complex use cases. The project which is the focus of this report, was carried out over 6 months, participation of 38 central banks, commercial banks, and market infrastructures. So we talked about this yesterday, but for a lot of people that are pushing back, say, oh, they'll never have a CBDC because the banks won't allow it. To the contrary, the banks are pushing this just as much as the central planners. Why? Because they're one and the same, and the banks own the central banks at the end of the day. But also, why would a bank want all these deposit liabilities? They just want to get paid. So think about this. If a bank issues a loan, they're doing that to make money, to make profit, obviously. So, but the problem there is they've got risk in the sense they cannot get paid back because they're creating a deposit liability, which is more money. And they're also, the offsetting asset is going to be that loan that's on their balance sheet. So the risk is that the borrower that they just created the money for doesn't pay them back, that blows a hole in their balance sheet, and they potentially go bust. But think about this. If they do the exact same loan, but instead of the currency units being a liability on their balance sheet, the currency units are simply a liability of the central bank that can't go bust. And you say, well, George, they don't have the asset. That's on the balance sheet of the central bank as well. Right, but do you think the bank cares? No, because the Fed is going to say, listen, you would have made $1 million on that loan. We'll just pay you $1 million fee for initiating the loan. So the bank gets paid the exact same amount, but has none of the downside. And plus, they don't have to deal with these pesky customers called depositors. This is a huge win for the banks, for most of the banks, some of the banks. The IFX marketplace model showed how CBDCs issued in domestic markets could be escrowed, wrapped in rules if needed. So basically what they're doing is they're tokenizing the CBDC itself and then trading that token or moving that token from account to account on the centralized ledger that is controlled and operated by SWIFT itself. And you say, oh, George, well, this is fantastic. This is a free market solution. Okay, great. Well, now let's go through. And as an example, this CLS company, this is a company that you'll see pop up over and over and over again. And when you do a quick Google search here, let's just, oh, I don't know, type in World Economic Forum and corporate partners. Corporate, here we go. And there are the corporate partners for the World Economic Forum themselves. And if we go down to C, what are the probabilities that CLS, which is a huge component of this whole thing, is a corporate partner of the World Economic Forum? Oh, there you go. CLS Bank International. Who would have thunk? Oh, but getting back to that. I mean, just can't make this stuff up. This is why I always say we have to be living in a simulation. Getting back to the report. The CLS-inspired settlement system, meanwhile, was able to demonstrate how the CLS-inspired netting and settlement engine could add value to the FX market. And you know what's interesting is the very first place that I saw one of the diagrams that I'm going to be showing you was not on the Swift website or even on the Swift report. It was actually on the CLS website. So it's just so obvious they're in cahoots. Growing fragmentation. Boo hoo. Who wants decentralization? Not me, or at least not the people at Swift, at least not Klaus Schwab. I'll tell you that much. Growing fragmentation. I love how they can totally spin decentralization to something that's just evil and we want it. That's very scary. We don't want that. They say while the rise of CBDCs is accelerating, there remains a significant risk of fragmentation. A significant risk. Just replace the word fragmentation with decentralization. Oh, you gotta love it. Who writes this stuff? And how much are they getting paid? And are they sick to their stomach the entire time? I mean, how do they rationalize this with their conscience? Jeez. Anyway, getting back to this first diagram, and we've gone over this a few times, but this is, if you can just do maybe a screenshot right now and we get done, I think it would be very helpful. Because it not only tells you what their objectives are, but it also shows you what money or what most people's version of money today in the modern world actually is. And it's not green pieces of paper. It's not gold. It's not any of this. And I'm not saying it should be this way, but it is what it is. Most people's view of money is simply what they have in the bank. But there's nothing in the bank. Those currency units were created by the bank lending them into existence. And the banks don't need money to lend or create money. So my point is you've got to get your mind around the fact that money as we know it today is simply a network of bank ledgers. That's it. That's it. And you can see that very clearly when we look at this diagram. So Swift, at least, thank you for that. And these little ecosystems are the domestic economies with the Eurozone, Hong Kong, we've got THB, I think that's Thailand, I'm not sure, ZAR, almost pause that, South Africa, AUD, it's going to be Australia, and SGD is going to be Singapore. Just using these as an example, I'm sure these are some of the areas that played along with their little sandbox game. And so within this little economy, this ecosystem, you've got the central bank, you've got the other banks and these banks talking to one another. And then they are sending messages via Swift. Now, tomorrow on the whiteboard video, I'm going to be setting up a Venn diagram to show you how the current system interacts. And you've got to keep in mind, the current system is relatively decentralized, but who is controlling the banks themselves? Will that be the central planners? And so why we want a decentralized system or a distributed ledger such as the Bitcoin blockchain is because it takes the power out of the central planners. See, that's key here. Even if you had a centralized ledger, if it somehow was, I shouldn't say centralized, even if you had one ledger, let's put it that way, but it was a distributed ledger, and it was controlled not by one entity or two or three or four or five, but is controlled by all the people that were on the network, then this is what we want. Even though you may say, hey, it's just one ledger. Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do, and this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're gonna have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're gonna have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is gonna be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd. So anyway, getting back to this, right now, these banks are talking to one another's correspondent banking relationships. We've got the euro dollar system. And then at times, these central banks are talking to the central banks. They set up swap lines. You guys know the drill. You know the routine. But what SWIFT wants to do is have all of these ledgers centralized onto the Fed, let's say, or the local central bank. And then those central banks' ledger will communicate and interact directly with the one main unified ledger that SWIFT wants to operate. And therefore, if you have a, you can't have a transaction just between this bank and this bank. That you'd have the transaction, but the transaction would occur on the ledger of, or it would occur on this one ledger, right? Where now you've got, although it's not ideal, at least it's decentralized to the point where a bank can do business with this bank, and the only ledgers that are involved are these two banks. The central bank doesn't know about that unless they're settling on the Fed's balance sheet, and the SWIFT payment system might not know about that. It's just between these two banks. So again, it's not ideal, but it's, and it's centralized to the point where these banks are going to be regulated by the central planners and the authoritarians at the end of the day, but it's a hell of a lot better than this system, to where every one of these ledgers is completely consolidated and centralized, just like Gosbank was in Russia from 1923 to 1992. And look in the very first diagram, look what we have, CLS. It's like, why are you here? It's like that guy that's like in the photo bomb at the bar, that's just drunk and in the back doing this. It's like, dude, who are you and why are you here? Same thing with CLS. In this diagram, like they just had to place them in there. And again, you can tell that they're just in cahoots with SWIFT, and then they're part of the World Economic Forum. They go into use cases. And let me be very clear. We have to be honest with ourselves as far as the benefits of this type of unified ledger. We can sit here and throw stones, which I will do nonstop. And on net balance, this is a huge negative, but it doesn't mean that it's without features. It doesn't mean that it's without efficiencies. This system, if we could eliminate the whole Big Brother thing, if we could eliminate all the downside risk of the power and the control going to all these megalomaniacs, this system is definitely superior to the one we have right now. As far as wholesale interbank transactions, absolutely. Because right now you have this correspondent banking relationship where it can be very expensive. For if you live in South Africa and you have Rand and you want to, let's say, send dollars to one of your customers that is banking with a Cayman Island bank, that's going to take a long time and it's going to be very expensive. With a CBDC system or a unified ledger, forget about it. That'll be basically instantaneous, and it will, might even be free. So we've got to realize what we're up against has a lot of features that are going to be very attractive to the current players within the network. And I think it'll be also very attractive to the average Joe and Jane. Just the other day for the CBDC Road Trip to Freedom Challenge, I was setting up an app, and I guess I can tell you the name of the app. It's Blue Wallet. We set up Blue Wallet to get some Bitcoin on there. And then I'm using Strike so I can transact when we get to Argentina, transact in Bitcoin. And, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen so many videos of the way you transfer Bitcoin from one person to the other is you literally just put your phone up there and you got the QR code, you got your wallet open and bing, they just do it and bam, it's on your phone. And people sit back and are like, oh my gosh, that was so amazing. Oh, this is incredible. How can you say that Bitcoin isn't the future? Is that incredible? Absolutely. But let's be honest. You don't think they're going to have that with the CBDC? Of course they are. Any retail feature they're going to have with Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency or anything, they're going to have that with the CBDC, right? So I'm not saying that it's good. I'm saying we have to understand who we're up against. And we are up against an opponent that is going to be very, 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 very powerful. Not just because the current players are going to get rich or even richer off this system. They're going to have more power, more control. But the vast majority of people out there, especially when they roll it out, I think will just gravitate to this like a moth to the flame. They'll say, this is the George, I hear you talk about this, how we should be concerned about a CBDC on your videos. Are you crazy? This is the best thing I've ever used. And then they start interacting with it. Then they become part of the network. And then 5 years later, they sit there and they say, oh, well, wow, how did I get this social score? Donald Trump didn't tell me anything about this when he told me that I should move my deposit liability to the Fed's balance sheet so I could get a higher interest rate. This is why we have to be realistic. So getting back to this diagram, you can see how this system is going to be way more efficient than the system we have right now in terms of interbank transactions. Now, let's just give the people that at Swift, the management, I'm not going to give them a pass, but the people that are just there working, the average guy or gal that's just, you know, making $100,000 doing research for them, they're probably, I don't know that they have malicious intent. So giving them the benefit of the doubt, let's go over one of the problems with what they're doing, because this tells us a lot about human nature and what we need to be cognizant of when we're doing our own analysis or when we think about the probabilities of other people in society analyzing the same thing we are. Here's my point. When they're going through all of this, and I've read, you know, 90% of this report, I've skimmed the other 10%. They're sitting there talking about, look, we've got a problem. It's like they're engineers. I'm sure they are engineers. And they're like, okay, we've been given a problem. How do we solve it? Therein lies the problem. And you guys know where I'm going with this. What does Thomas Sowell teach us? There are no solutions. There are only trade-offs. So what they're doing is they're just asking themselves, how do we make this system that we have right now more efficient? What they aren't asking is, what's the downside? We're centralizing all of this power. Could there be any unintended consequences? See, if they looked at this from a standpoint of trade-offs and not solutions, they might come to vastly different conclusions. They might not even want to work on the project to begin with. Where unfortunately, and it's not just these people, I see this happen constantly. And it's usually with scientists and engineers. They are given a problem and they get so hyper-focused on fixing that problem, they forget that in fixing that problem, it may lead to even bigger problems than the one you're trying to fix to begin with. And you see that as a constant theme throughout this entire report. Here's another diagram, which I found fascinating because it gives you insights as to how things work now, but also how they're seeing this play out in the future. And once again, right in the middle, we got the photo bomb from CLS. Why? Anyway, I think you guys know why. So this orange dotted line represents the future Euro CBDC network, Eurozone, we'll call it. Over here on the right, we've got the Hong Kong dollar CBDC network. And you've got a bank here on the left. The first one is, I believe this was, I don't know why they're not listing it. On the other diagram, I saw this was Deutsche Bank and this was HSBC. That's weird. Why is it not on this anymore? Anyway, getting back to this. So assume this, and now they don't have the transaction. What is going on? Wow, that's bizarre. I wonder why they changed it on the CLS website. You know what? I'll bet this diagram actually was created by CLS. And then they gave it to Swift, and Swift used an earlier version. I'll bet you that's what happened. So anyway, the transaction here was euros. They were selling euros and buying Hong Kong dollars. A customer of this bank, I believe. And so this bank is going to go ahead and give them the Hong Kong dollars. But as you guys know, that's a liability on their balance sheet. So the problem there is they've got FX risk because they've got Hong Kong dollar liabilities, but they've got euro assets. So what do you do? Well, the Swift goes into the TM simulator that goes down and gives instruction to the CLS processing engine. And then what the CLS processing engine does is they initiate the transaction and they do the settlement process all in a split second using these CBDCs. And this would be on the main ledger. And these banks represent the accounts that would be on the main ledger, right? So they call them a Nostro wallet with this, you know, with now what would be a CLS bank, a CLS international bank. And a Nostro account is just basically the account, a checking account that this bank A, we'll call it Deutsche, has with CLS, if you want to call them a global dealer bank or something like that. And then same thing over here with HSBC. So what they do is they take the euros, they CLS takes the euros from Deutsche Bank and puts them into the Nostro account for HSBC. And then they take the Hong Kong dollars from HSBC and they put them into the Nostro account for Deutsche Bank. So now all of a sudden, Deutsche Bank has that, they had a euro liability. Now they have a Hong Kong dollar liability. But now through this transaction, they've got an offsetting asset that's denominated in Hong Kong dollars, not euros. So they don't have any of that FX risk. So this is, I love this stuff because it's kind of geeking out on how it all works, which I think is super cool. But this is how they're envisioning kind of taking the existing system and turning it into or plugging it into a CBDC model, where again is nothing more than this ledger that is centralized, that is controlled by Swift. And it looks like they envision their partner, CLS, which is, might as well just insert Klaus's picture right here. Next thing I've got highlighted, the CLS-inspired settlement system demonstrates how an existing critical infrastructure widely adopted by FX industry could successfully be used to remove settlement risk from cross-CBDC transactions, as it currently does for fiat currencies and central bank money. All right, so, and this goes back to the earlier video where I was talking about how when we think about the debt crisis or the narrative of the current debt crisis, that there's going to be all this supply, no more demand, and then interest rates at long end of the curve are going to go up. That's going to cause the problem to get even worse because the interest payments increase to a point where it even exceeds, let's just say, tax receipts. And that just lowers demand even further, which makes rates go up even higher. And then the last resort is the Fed has to step in and do QE, monetize the debt, and then the release valve there is the dollar. That's the story. But what this assumes is there's not going to be any demand for these treasuries. And that, in my view, is a fundamental misunderstanding of how the monetary system works. So I don't want to go down that path again, but the key there is, and what we talked about in the last video, there has to be a catalyst. I'm not saying that the increasing debt of the United States is sustainable, but in order for it to matter, there has to be a fundamental change in the monetary system. And a catalyst is not just, well, the number's gone from 33 trillion to 34 trillion. That's not a catalyst. The catalyst, in my view, would be a fundamental change in the monetary system, such as a CBDC. And I think in the earlier video, I said this would eliminate the need for collateral as treasuries. That's going too far. I should not have said that, because there will still be that need, most likely, but the need would decrease because there's an ability to directly settle on the balance sheets of the central banks. And let's remember, like Gosbank, they could be the entity issuing that credit to these banks or to these entities in the real global economy, and they might have much more lenient lending standards for the simple reason they don't have to get paid back. So if you're an entity that has a great ESG score, let's say just a multinational company XYZ, and you need a loan for $10 billion, well, you might have been able to get that loan before, but you would have had to post collateral. And now you're like, collateral? Who cares? You got a 98 ESG score, my friend. That's Greta Thunberg approved. There you go. In fact, we're not even going to charge you an interest rate. And therefore, you see, the need for collateral in that situation would be a lot less. Now, it wouldn't go to zero, far from it, but it would be a lot less. So I should have said that a different way. Now that we're all on the same page, let's keep going here. So I think that's what I wanted to discuss based on this highlighted segment. Let's keep going. Oh, here's where they talk about it, the distributed ledger technology. And I think they're using these buzzwords because, okay, sure. Would it be a distributed ledger? Yeah. I mean, I guess you could sit there and say that all these entities would have a copy of the ledger. But okay. So they have a copy. Who cares? Right? It's a distributed ledger, but there's only one entity that's controlling the inputs on that ledger. And effectively, it's the exact same thing as just having one and just having people, or not people, but these entities that are within the network that have the privilege, the ability to see it and make sure things are reconciled. I mean, basically what we have now is, with the Eurodollar system, is a distributed ledger. Again, the reason that's suboptimal is because those entities that have the distributed ledger are controlled by the government. Therefore, if you, the average Joe Jane, want to transact and the government doesn't like what you're doing, well, they can stop that via their control over the entities that have the capability to manage the distributed ledger. Where if you take that out of the hands of the central planners and the banksters altogether, and you put that in the hands of the people, now all of a sudden you can transact any way you want. And this is just the key to, I think, navigating a CBDC world, that if we can somehow, and people say, well, Bitcoin is the answer here. Well, maybe long term it is, but it's not short term if you've got that volatility. You've got a volatility paradox there that I talk about, whereas the float goes decreases because of people holding, your vol is going to increase likely, and that's going to deter people from actually using it from a standpoint of transactions or a unit of exchange, if you want to use that terminology. So I don't know if this solution exists. I know there's some incredibly smart people working on it, but we've got to figure out a way just to buy the Bitcoiners time to create this ecosystem and for the market cap of Bitcoin to get to the point where it is less volatile. That's not going to happen overnight. So we've got to have a solution to give us some runway, to buy us some time. And I think that the solution has to be figuring out how to transact in a way that's less volatile on with blockchain technology. Let's keep going here. Atomic settlement. It seems, okay, I don't know why it's moving around on me here. It's like I'm going over the exact same parts just over and over again. Okay, so here's, they're saying the summary of Swift connector capabilities per use case. So we've got trade payments, FX, foreign exchange, delivery versus payments. One thing that they haven't talked about is the tokenization of all assets. So you guys have to remember that they're not just referring to CBDCs or a centralized ledger from a standpoint of money. They're looking at it from a standpoint of stocks, bonds, housing, real estate, absolutely everything that you own, tokenized and then put onto that centralized system, to where if they see you not wearing a mask, well, they've got control at the end of the day of the title of your home. And you want to talk about the great taking. My goodness gracious. This gives them, this makes the great taking like 100 times easier. There you go, guys. We're going to have to follow this story very closely. And I can assure you, I'll stay on top of it. Going to try to do a whiteboard video. I will be the first person to admit that I don't understand all of this. I'm going through it and trying to really, well, I'm trying to understand it to the best of my ability. And I'm going to do my best to communicate that to you in a whiteboard video. But there are a lot of moving parts. And what we get in the next 12 to 24 months from Swift, assuming that they roll this out, could be quite a bit different than what they have in this report. We're in a very fluid environment and obviously one that is extremely volatile. So we'll be following it on this channel. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your evening. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market, capitalism, and definitely check out Rebel Capitalists Live. We've been talking about that all day long. Some of the speakers on here, Josh, throw us over. And like we are talking about with Kenny, I've only invited bald men to speak at Rebel Capitalist Live. As you can see, Rich Cooper, Robert Barnes, Ivor Cummins, all bald. But, oh, Elwood, Chris McIntosh, another bald guy. Any more bald guys? No, I guess not. All right. So you got about half and half, about half bald guys and half guys that actually have hair. In fact, Snyder has so much hair now, he probably makes up for Rich, Robert, and Ivor just with the locks that he has going on. So anyway, guys, this is going to be an incredible event. Get your tickets at rebelcapitalistlive.com, and we'll see you on the next video.